Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by Nogueira.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Ken Evans.
Election Day edition!
Covering the Election Day edition.
Vote Roids, John Jones.
Or John Jones. Or RDA. We'll get to that here in a minute.
RDA's on Roids?
Well, no, I just think like some of the popular opinion when we talk about that fight is that perhaps USADA has done him some disservice because he doesn't look like the same fighter that he did
at
one point.
I hadn't heard much of that rumbling. I didn't catch up on the fight until yesterday anyhow, so.
So we'll talk about all that stuff. We'll, of course, head to New York and talk about UFC Madison Square Garden. I don't know why they didn't just call it that instead of numbering it, but it's UFC
MSG.
Madison Square Garden. MSG.com. Yeah. It's already breaking records. The card is going to be bananas. I at least am super excited to see what happens.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Yes. Yeah, hopefully.
This card is bananas.
It is bananas.
Sorry, you can't say bananas without me thinking of that song.
I know. So we will
To be fair, this is going to go a little inside baseball before we start. It's because Eric made me play that song a million times when it was out. It was actually Eric's fault.
It is all my fault.
Back in his
Gwen
top 40
Stefani's
days.
Entire career is all my fault prior to
his
illustrious MMA career.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
That we have right now.
Go ahead.
Eric. So this past weekend, we had what I thought was an interesting card. And at the top of that was RDA and Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson, who beats RDA. And I thought looked great in that fight after the first round. And, people on Twitter were talking about USADA and RDA, and you can fill in whatever supposition you would like there. But the fact remains that if you want to look at a fighter who has fallen off more than RDA, I don't know who that would be, going from champion to being beat by Tony Ferguson in a matter of, 6 months.
3 months.
3 months, right?
July, four months, essentially.
4 months, right? Like, what do you do with that guy? Because right now, at 205 in the prelims, you've got Nurmagomedov and Michael Johnson, so you're going to figure out what happens there. And as I said on our Facebook page, and I will say it here, if Nurmagomedov wins, guys, he's the de facto number one contender.
So, yeah, Nurmagomedov, if he wins, he's going to be the contender. I think one of the things we saw from Tony Ferguson was a big win on Saturday night. But if you take some of the show bias out of it, and I know you're a big fan, and he's from right down the road from where our home base is, I don't think you look at that fight and go, oh, there's your next champion, which sometimes you want to see in those number one contender matches. But again, I don't want to take anything from RDA because you kind of said some of the sentiment I've heard online, which is, oh, man, what a big fall off. We don't know. Maybe he didn't fall off that much. Maybe Tony's that good. He had an off night against Eddie Alvarez, and RDA's that good. Tony just is stuffing the shots. I mean, you saw in the first round, RDA was able to get him down, and then RDA didn't really know what to do with that lanky, unorthodox ground game that Tony's been able to employ in a very effective way in this division. I mean, Tony didn't really stay on the ground more than a minute if he didn't want to.
Well, and I've been saying it this week, and I want to say it on this show because I want to reiterate, if you missed the nuance when we talked to him last week, and go back and listen to it in the podcast. Guys, he did a camp by himself in the mountains that included building his own gym, right? So whether or not you saw the champion on Saturday night beat RDA, I want to reiterate the fact that this is a guy who is successful despite all of the best practices in mixed martial arts. And that's something that I want to call attention to, regardless of what happens next. This is a guy who essentially is somehow getting better, seemingly by himself, which goes against all of what MMA coaches and camps and whomever will tell you to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to kind of look at this situation. Obviously, we're talking a little bit about this fight night because it's going to play right into get our breakdown of 205. And obviously, 205, you've got the main event, which is Eddie Alvarez, Conor McGregor at this point. Conor McGregor saying the whole UFC would go out of business if not for him. Do you agree with that or no? That's supposed to be a quick no.
Well, no, I mean, sorry. Do I agree with him? No, not necessarily. But I would say that I don't know that the organization is worth $4 billion without him in it.
Really? So how much of that $4 billion would you drop down at Conor McGregor's feet?
3.8 billion.
Okay, let's calm down, everybody. Look, he's an amazing fighter. He's in there. He's the top pay-per-view draw in the company. No doubt, no doubt, no doubt. He can sell anything. He flies through weight classes, but I just thought that was a little bit funny. He is driving this card, and who would have thought back when we really, realistically, we started talking about New York back, what, 3-4 years ago, maybe?
Yes.
I mean, we would have never have realized who would be headlining this card. That's how quickly things change and how much the UFC, you know, is about personalities and about fighters that are able to kind of get on streaks and start moving towards titles. And a guy who's really embraced that is Conor McGregor. Because really, New York, I mean, honestly, the last time we talked about New York, or the first time, I should say, we talked about New York in a real way, we were talking about GSP and Silva. That was what everybody wanted, was that super fight. And let's save that for New York, New York, New York. We're trying to get GSP and Silva again in a much different way, with both men in very different parts of their career at this point. So I just find that's kind of interesting. If I remember some of the discussion we've had on the show years ago, that we're looking at this UFC New York card. People, you are calling it one of the biggest cards ever. You still think it's bigger than 200.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Because of the championship fights, all main eventing?
Well, you've got three championship fights, but then even on the undercard, you've got Frankie Edgar, Jeremy Stephens, Nurmagomedov, Michael Johnson, Rashad Evans, and Tim Kennedy. That's your undercard.
You know what you don't got?
What?
You don't got Brock.
You don't got Brock, that's for sure.
Fair enough.
And I think Brock, as an outlier, it makes it really difficult to compare Brock to anything else because he brings in eyeballs in a way that no one else does, and he changes the dynamic of the card. And so if you were to take Brock off of 200, I think you would agree with me 100%.
Oh, for sure, but it's still Brock, so it'll be interesting.
So if we're talking about the purity of the sport, right, somebody who is consistently fighting, I'm not saying that Brock is not a real fighter. That's not what I'm saying. But somebody who isn't coming in, doing a one-off, and then bouncing, this card is better than 200.
Okay. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you there. I think some people have been a little dismissive of 200, and obviously Brock has a lot to do with that, and that's okay. That's okay. So we look at this card. What's interesting, because you just mentioned Khabib is on the preliminary, which I didn't realize until we just started breaking the card down in the sections of what we're looking at as far as where everybody's landing. Well, what do you think about that? He's not even in the pimp spot, is what we used to call it there. He's not in that final spot.
Well, Nurmagomedov is a guy who will be 23-0 if he beats Michael Johnson, and that is impressive, but he's been on a really long layoff because of injury. And so I don't think he can be in the pimp spot because I don't know that you can guarantee fireworks when he's been off as long as he's been off. Where Stevens and Edgar, that's going to be straight fire and going to get people to tune in, and buy that pay-per-view.
Okay. It's kind of interesting, though, because we really, like you've called this division a Shark Tank for a long time, and we'll obviously get to Eddie and Connor in a minute here because they're the title holders and they're really essentially going to be in the driver's seat as far as where we see this division go in the next couple of months. Khabib taking on Michael Johnson in this division, that puts number three against number six, I believe.
Yes.
Number two and six,
because Ferguson is three.
Yeah, well, Ferguson's one now. I'm sorry. I'm using the updated rankings.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So that's what's kind of interesting because everybody, I don't think it's unfair at that point where you have the number three guy at that point who beat the number one guy. RDA was still number one in the division to put him to number one. But that's interesting when you start looking at, let's use a baseball lineup as a bit of a reference point here. Oh, this guy just batted this, so let's slide him up in the lineup. Well, what you have is he got to go first, so to speak. Tony Ferguson did at this fight night card, and he got to get his win on the record first and put himself at number one. Does Khabib, with a win over number six, who's very impressive, that's a top 10 win, a big layoff, do you put a guy who beats number six above the guy who's ranked number one in the division?
You do, for two reasons. One, Khabib's 23-0 is more impressive than Ferguson's 9-fight win streak at this point. And two, Ferguson lost to Michael Johnson. Khabib did not.
Fair enough. And then you could say, though, but he just beat RDA. But then again, they both do have a win over RDA.
Yes. So all things being equal,
you're gonna put a Khabib and straight up. And I'm not even talking about making the fight later.
No.
You're gonna put Khabib ahead of Tony.
If he beats Michael Johnson, to me, it would be Nurmagomedov, Ferguson. if you could do ties in this ranking, and they don't allow you to do that, but if you could,
I think we've seen those as long as they're out of the championship level. They've landed.
Do they let you? Because I don't know that I've seen that.
I feel like I've seen those before. Where we'll have a 3-3 or something.
If you could do ties, I guess I wouldn't be mad about a tie. But I think because of the Michael Johnson.
Well, number one, you probably don't want to do a tie.
Given what could happen this weekend, it might not matter, right?
Right.
RDA, I'm fine with 3. Nate Diaz is 4. Barboza is 5. Michael Johnson, 6. Mike Chiesa at 7.
Yeah. You can stop.
You don't? Okay.
You're good. We've got enough going on at the top. We don't really need to dig deep in this division to start finding championship fights.
What is interesting, though, at these updated rankings is the retired Ally Aquinta is still ranked at lightweight.
Yeah, but he only fell a spot after last week, so maybe they're not believing he's actually going to retire, so we'll see.
He's just slowly retiring off the rankings. Right, just he goes down a slot every event till he's off.
So, obviously, we usually wouldn't spend this much time on a fight night main event and then spend this much time on the undercard of 205 as we want to talk about 205, but this all lays the groundwork for the fight that we're all basically tuning in to see, even with other championship fights on this card, which is going to be Eddie Alvarez and the unranked in this division,
right,
Conor McGregor. So we've heard a lot of back and forth talk. We've heard about Eddie Alvarez's comments that he's not really fought anybody, talking about Conor McGregor. Diaz isn't even top 5 in the division. I think he might just be at the edge of top 5 now. And to be honest, Nate Diaz was never a world beater at lightweight, so it would not seem that simply having a win, a split series over Nate Diaz, should put Conor into a title shot. Does Eddie have a lot of room to stand here when he's saying, hey, he shouldn't even be in the division. This is going to be an easier fight for me. Conor McGregor's not my caliber at this weight class.
No, and I would say watching the McGregor from Diaz fight 1 to Diaz fight 2. So Diaz coming in what we'll call the Michael Bisping spot, short notice, takes the fight at 170. He submits Conor McGregor takes that lesson and learns a lot and looks like a completely different fighter in that second fight to do things to Nate Diaz that most people would not have thought possible given fight number 1. The fact that he is the featherweight champion, I think, gives him the ability to call his shots at that point. And that's certainly what he's been doing in the organization. And if Eddie Alvarez is pretending he's mad about this, he's full of it because he's never made more money in his life than he's going to make for this fight.
Well,
ask Nate Diaz.
I don't think that that's necessarily exclusive of how he feels about Conor McGregor as a challenger, though. The fact that he's going to make a lot of money fighting the guy. I thought it was interesting. I think this was this last week when they did one of the media things? And that was where Conor McGregor mentioned that he was going to retire Alvarez, that his wife and kids wouldn't recognize him. And usually for fighters, when that happens, you see it all. It just goes off. I mean, not necessarily to throwing monsters across the hall, but usually fighters get really upset. Right. Eddie Alvarez kind of laughed at him when he said that. Is that a laugh? Is that a nervous laugh? Is that you're ridiculous? Why would you think you can do that to me at my weight class?
In the embedded, Alvarez was saying that he felt that that was a sign of weakness, and when you go to that level, that means that you're scared of your opponent. So I think that's why he's laughing in that press conference, because he feels that now he's got under Conor's skin.
Here's the problem. I think he has a bit, but nobody got under Conor's skin more than Nate Diaz, and you saw exactly what happened in that second fight.
Right.
And I still to this day believe that Nate Diaz really got under his skin. He just wasn't able to close it out in the fight because Conor had prepared properly, had the camp, and had done things like you said that he didn't do in that first fight. So in that instance, I still believe Nate Diaz got under Conor's skin more than anybody ever has up to this point, including Eddie Alvarez. So I don't know if that matters, even if Eddie's right.
And I wouldn't disagree with you. And I think when you look at their combined records, you probably could make the case that Eddie Alvarez has fought some bigger names over the course of his career. But he lost to Donald Cerrone in a unanimous decision. He split with Anthony Pettis. He split with Gil Melendez and then knocked out RDA. So it's not as if, and again, it's a shark tank. I'm not taking anything away, but it's not as if Eddie Alvarez started with Evan Dunham at 13 and beat 12 human beings to face RDA, then beat RDA. So now you've got this king of the mountain sort of.
No, because, I mean, you could easily see 5 guys other than Conor McGregor go in there and not necessarily say that they don't have a really good shot of winning the title.
Well, and if you look at how Eddie Alvarez got to this point in his career, He beat two guys before he fought RDA, one of which isn't in that weight class anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Gill is number 11. So if you're going to talk about...
Yeah, but to be fair, I mean, this is kind of like going into this... Gill was number one. I mean, at that point, they had just hired him for Bellator, right?
Yes, but my point going... like you. Until the fight happens, you don't know. And right now, Conor McGregor is sucking up all the oxygen wherever he goes. And I don't know why you would waste a minute trying to say the guy doesn't deserve it, because I don't see anything in Conor's resume that indicates that he doesn't deserve whatever he wants to try, because he's continually a pay-per-view draw.
Mm-hmm.
He continually helps improve fighter pay to the person that's standing across the octagon from him. So if anything, if Conor McGregor wants to fight you, that's nothing but good for your career, regardless of what happens.
Just to clarify, I misspoke. Obviously, I meant Eddie had come over and then with Gil Melendez.
Yes.
There. So Gil was obviously in Strikeforce
like,
for a long
time. I'm not saying
time.
Eddie didn't deserve to fight RDA.
No. I'm just clarifying. We'll get a tweet.
My point is the fact that it's not like he didn't go through Johnson, Barboza, Nurmagomedov and Ferguson to get there.
Okay.
He went through a guy that isn't in that division right now, and a guy who's ranked 11th.
So I guess where does this land as far as what you think is going to happen in this lightweight championship fight that's main eventing in New York? Do you think Conor McGregor is able to pull it off? He's out of his weight class. I know he beat Diaz at 170, but that's a little bit different. You got a guy who's not really top five in this division, although technically he's four right now. He was able to gain notches in that division
right
by fighting it out of his division and losing one of the fights.
Why the sport is wonderful.
Well, that's also why those guys are insane that you used to invite over to your house to vote every Monday.
Yes.
So what do you think happens in this fight when you start looking straight up? Okay, we take away the hype. We take away the screaming. We take away the stare downs we're going to see later this week. In the fight itself, I still think you've got a guy in Conor McGregor who's still going to be questionable at a certain point if somebody's able to get him on the ground. And I think Eddie's a guy that could do that if he wanted to.
I'm going to use a little bit of our favorite game, and I'm going to use MMA math.
Okay.
Right? And so Eddie Alvarez beats RDA in 3 minutes and 49 seconds to become the champion.
Mm-hmm.
This past weekend, RDA fought another lanky fighter in Tony Ferguson, who after that first round just turned it up and did whatever he wanted for four other rounds to RDA.
Okay.
And RDA and Alvarez, to me, are very similar body types. And I think the lankiness and the distance that Conor McGregor can keep, I feel like he's just going to pick him
apart.
Yeah,
but Conor's not that big, though. When you see these guys again, he looks big in his division. He looks small against Nate Diaz.
But he's down 15 pounds at this
point.
Okay,
but that doesn't make him any lankier. Are you calling Conor McGregor lanky? Am I misunderstanding you?
I'm saying, and without looking up any statistics, which I will do right now,
okay.
I believe Conor McGregor is taller, therefore lankier, than Eddie Alvarez.
Is he might be taller. I don't know. He's never struck me that. Eddie's only like 5'9", though.
Oh. Okay.
But there's a big difference between that to Conor than Tony Ferguson, who's really long and lanky, obviously, and has a very strong wrestling background and ground game, and has kind of morphed it into his own like little defensive jiu-jitsu, weird out of nowhere. Here's my leg right in your face when you're trying to punch me. You wouldn't say that on the ground, Tony Ferguson and Conor McGregor are comparable.
Sorry, they are the same height.
Yeah, they're tiny.
Conor has a 5-inch reach advantage.
That's 2.5 on each side. So let's not pretend that he's long and lanky and like Stefan Struve is going to walk into the cage against Eddie Alvarez.
When you're talking about a Shark Tank, and I don't know when you became this Eddie Alvarez fanboy.
I'm not. Talking about lanky Conor McGregor is more like what? What are you talking about?
A 5-inch reach advantage is a big deal when you're dealing with a Shark Tank.
That's 2.5 on each side. And plus, I've never seen Conor McGregor actually use length in anything that he does. He doesn't really stay out of range. Even in his striking, he gets in close. So you're saying all of a sudden, Conor McGregor's going to decide, hey, I got 2.5 on him on each side.
No,
so I'm going to start some.
What I'm saying and what I have seen is I've seen a fighter that continues to evolve at the featherweight division and then beat everybody in that division. So there was nothing left to do. So he took a different challenge because RDA couldn't make it to the fight and wanted to save the pay-per-view. Lost that fight, learned from that fight, and came back and essentially won a majority, not essentially, actually won a majority decision against Nate Diaz, who had subbed him in the first fight. So when we're talking about every advantage counting at this division because it's highly competitive. Mm-hmm. I would be having a much different conversation with you if you want to talk about his fight against Tony Ferguson or his fight against Nurmagomedov. But in this fight, I don't know that I would ever, ever in a million years pick Eddie Alvarez to win this.
So you think this is going to be a rout for Conor McGregor?
I don't know. That's not what I'm not saying.
That's what I'm hearing.
Your supposition is not listening.
No.
I'm not saying he's going to rout him. I'm not saying he's going to beat him in 13 seconds. I think all of those are unreasonable.
Well, his coach said 8 minutes, right?
Eddie Alvarez is a legit fighter, and it has a resume that's impressive and makes this fight super interesting. I just think it's not going to be as boring as what GSP used to do, mm-hmm. but Conor McGregor's fight IQ and what he proved from fight one with Nate Diaz to fight two leads me to believe that he's better at reading the tea leaves than Alvarez is.
So at this point, you are picking Conor McGregor to win this fight.
Correct.
So here's the interesting part. Conor McGregor wins this fight. Now, obviously, how he wins will play into this factor.
Yes, it will.
But I'm just going to tell you, Conor McGregor wins. And let's say Khabib does not get upset, because I think you could safely call that an upset, even with the layoff.
Yes, he would get upset.
Khabib does not get upset. And you've got Tony Ferguson lying in wait, who's at number one, two. So you're going to have one and two. Whatever order they're in, which fight do you want to see? Which fight do we end up seeing if Conor McGregor wins the title in this division? And so, one other thing at play, Dana said over and over again, and they've gone back and forth on this, he's going to have to give up 145 or essentially defend 145, which could then now start holding up 155. So don't forget that's floating out there. So you've got one and two in the division, okay, which would be Khabib and Tony Ferguson, the way you think that it's going to play out. You're going to have Conor McGregor, who wins in convincing fashion, likely, over Eddie Alvarez. And you've got this 145 belt still out there that hasn't been defended in God knows how long. I'd have to actually go look up McGregor's wiki to find out when he won that. I mean, it's never been defended.
Never been defended,
because that was an interim belt, was the first one he had. So he's never actually defended the title belt. It'll be over a year because it was December of 15. So you've got all that out there. What do we see next for Conor McGregor and, by default, this lightweight division that you've just shined a huge spotlight on with the main event status in UFC 205 in New York City?
So you asked me two questions. What do I want to happen and what do I think will happen?
Yes.
What I want to happen is if Conor McGregor wins, and let's say he beats the brakes off Eddie Alvarez for five rounds, so it's without question. It's not a 13-second flash knockout.
Or it's a dominating four-round performance, even a decision.
He wins in a way that makes it seem like a rematch would be silly at this point. What I would like to see is Conor Nurmagomedov, Ferguson, Alvarez.
Ferguson Alvarez. So Ferguson's got to see, man.
Because Ferguson doesn't care. He said it time and time again.
I get that he doesn't care, but that's also a dude who maybe shouldn't be building his own gym and maybe finding a spot to refine his training methods. And God bless him, but man, if you're number two in that division and you can find a way to wait until that title shot, and again, I don't say you sit for 7 or 8 months, but the way that Conor fights often.
Well, so what I think is going to happen is going to play into why I think this first part.
So 145, you don't care about the belt.
I want him to drop 145.
You want him to drop 145. You want him to then fight Nurmagomedov for the title.
Yes.
And you want Ferguson and Alvarez for another default shot. Essentially,
yes.
Okay, and I don't have a huge problem with that because you've got a former champion. If he's able to beat the guy to get back to the title shot, and you don't necessarily knock Tony Ferguson down that far.
What I think will happen. Well, this will be my hot take for the day. What I think will happen.
Spicy election day take, everybody.
Is beats Alvarez in a way that the rematch doesn't make much sense. Decides he's defending 145 at the Super Bowl card, which holds up 155, gets injured at the Super Bowl card, so he's got to be out for a minute.
Oh, wow, you've got a lot of supposition.
Which means Nurmagomedov and Eddie Alvarez fight for interim belt,
mm-hmm.
and then you get the interim belt sometime in the summer fought against Conor McGregor, let's call it the July card.
See, you got your Vince McMahon jacket on today, so you're booking the whole year.
I'm booking the whole year.
Well, I'm sorry, that wouldn't be a Vince McMahon jacket. That'd be screaming from backstage 10 minutes before.
Right.
Jericho's going over. He's going over.
So that's what I think will happen.
So you're working ahead a little bit here. I believe
somebody in this organization has to, so it might as well be me.
It's not anybody that we know at this point. So Conor McGregor wins. I think he defends a belt against Nurmagomedov.
Do you not think he's going to win this fight?
I don't think it's as much of a gimme as people seem to be.
But if you had to pick,
if I had to pick, probably, yeah. But you know me, once I hear enough people say one thing, I start to look at the other side and go, why is everybody so on board? And I think there's obviously the internet echo chamber that causes a lot of this, and people don't necessarily take the time to break these things down. But I certainly don't, I don't see it being as much of a landslide as people tend to feel it's going to be with Conor McGregor at this point. Like, if Conor got knocked square the F out in the first 10 minutes, the first two rounds here, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
And that's what I was going to say. Like, I'm not going to be mad if Eddie Alvarez defends. In fact, I think for the sanity of 155, it would be nice to figure out who's actually good in the division as opposed to just throwing the belt around every 6 months to the next person that shows up.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like Conor McGregor's fight IQ is better than Alvarez, and I think he'll be able to outwork him.
See, it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm not going to discount Conor's work. I'm not going to discount the IQ there. But I think they're both smart fighters. I think it's going to be a really interesting fight. And there's a reason it's the main event for this UFC card in New York.
And then the co-main event, we go to the welterweight division as Tyron Woodley, the chosen one, takes on Wonderboy.
The money fight. He gets. Oh no! Wait, what?
Takes on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
I thought we were going to get maybe Nick or Nate Diaz.
Nope.
A GSP.
GSP. You get Wonderboy.
I get Wonderboy. Who I like. Who is fine. But man.
Who is fine.
Tyron Woodley, though, I don't know how his deal works, but if he gets pay-per-view points, he's got to be happy he's on Conor's card.
Yep.
Because that was... it's sort of like the Daniel Cormier thank you text to Brock Lesnar. Remember that story from 200?
Yep.
When Brock sent him a text that said Christmas is in July, when Daniel Cormier asked if he was going to be on the card, because every guy on the card, especially guys with points, and Cormier must be one of those dudes, is going to make out. I don't know if Woodley's one of those dudes, because I mean, he just won the belt, so it's not necessarily one of those guys that's going to get points, but at least he's on a card where he's definitely going to be seen, and it'll be interesting to see how he does against Wonderboy.
Because he's
going to
leave with points. He's not going to leave with his
you
belt.
Don't. Wow, Eric is just laying it down. Do we have to go back to picks? We stopped doing this when you were all over the place, if I remember correctly.
Well, I think we stopped.
And then
doing
every once in a while on Twitter, you'll be like, all my picks are right. I'm like, you never said those things out loud. What?
Well, but I like lots of people on Facebook.
I'm 6-0 for the night. Well, me too then.
On WoW Show have asked for us to do it for this card specifically. So I'm going to, I'm picking hard picks. These are my hard and fast picks. I got Wonderboy in this one.
Okay, you got Wonderboy here. All right, okay. So
I think this is a fascinating, I love this whole card. I think this is a fascinating fight.
Okay, so we got Wonderboy, Tyron Woodley. I'll take Woodley, just for the sake of the show, I guess.
You don't have to.
No, I think he's going to win. I think the one good thing about this whole rigmarole around the fact that he couldn't get his quote-unquote money fight is I think this motivated him 10 times more for this Wonderboy fight than we would have seen as opposed to a fighter who just goes in, I want to take on the next fighter, the best challenge, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we hear that all the time.
Yep.
Whoever they put in front of me, I'm the champ. Boring, go to sleep while the interview's on.
Right.
He's like, no, I want a money fight. No, you're not getting it. How about F you and I just walk through this guy to my money fight. That's the feeling I'm kind of getting from Tyron Woodley now. So I think that makes this a much more interesting fight than if he had been some quote-unquote gracious champion, walked out there, whoever they put in front
whoever
of me.
Joe Silva puts in front of
I'm
me.
The champion.
I would love to.
Joe Silva's leaving, though. Who's going to do it? I don't know. Whoever does it. Puts in front of me. No, he went out there. He won the money fight. He didn't get it. So you know how he's got to get there? He's got to go through Wonderboy, and he's got to make it definitive so there's not another rematch. And I think he's going to be super motivated in this fight to do that.
And then in the strawweight division, Jen Jerchak defends her title against Carolina Kolasek. And I don't... Every time I see Jen Jerchak fight, I don't know who's going to be.
Well, she's got to be pound for pound at this point.
Without a doubt.
I mean, because she's only like 100 pounds. So, well, yes. I mean, if you think of all the fighting skill, then you measure it out by the pound.
By per pound?
Yeah, if you
per
do it into
fighting skill.
If you put it into the Google and you make them knock it down, like when you're trying to figure out your ounces versus your pounds. Pound for pound, she... Not only do I think she's in the top five, I think she might be getting very close to unquestionably number one pound for pound in the UFC.
And I think her second fight against Claudelia, where Claudelia beat her for two rounds and she essentially shook it off and then beat the pants off of Claudelia, for me was that defining moment where you're like, okay, this champion has been tested. This champion took the best that Claudelia had. And went after it and kept her belt. So I don't like Carolina's chances in this. And I think Johanna, like you said, is easily top five, if not top three right now.
Yeah. And
I think it's going to be difficult in my mind.
Your friends on the internet don't even have her in the top five, which I think is insane.
In my
mind, they have Eddie Alvarez ahead of Johanna Jędrzejczyk
because of his long history, right? of three fights in the UFC.
I think some of these dummies think the pound for pound is like if they all fought each other. I think that's what, I don't think they quite understand the concept.
Because one time 8 years ago, Anderson Silva said that's what it should be when he wanted to pretend fight Jose Aldo and said that Jose would beat him because pound for pound.
But they're not very consistent with that because Demetrius Johnson wouldn't beat probably anybody else on this list other than Johanna Jędrzejczyk. Is that what's going to get me interested
maybe
in a DJ fight? I don't know.
I would say, but what I was going to say is I think she's got a ways to go to beat DJ in that regard, though, because DJ, I still think, is one of the best fighters in the UFC, period.
Yeah, but I like to watch her.
That's fine. and that says something because she's able to make this division. Like, think about that out loud. You're excited about a women's strawweight fight.
Like strawweight, yeah.
Because this woman makes it exciting because she goes out there and does some incredible, incredible stuff.
I want to know what's going on in Poland.
Right.
I mean, yeah. They're churning out some women fighters there. It's the pierogies.
Yeah, it's all the pierogies.
It's probably the pierogies. Is that on an embedded?
Yes.
UFC embedded.
We go back to the middleweight division as Chris Weidman takes on Yoel Romero. This is also a fun fight. And it will be fun to see when Chris enters the octagon.
Luke is hurt right now. Oh, wait. Luke's hurt.
Luke is hurt.
So,
yes.
Let's not get too far ahead, but the way, because Bisping did not take that fight, and we explained that last week on the show, this could be setting up a title fight here for Chris Weidman. He could do it in New York City. Not as good as a title fight, but the shot to maybe be in that title fight, it's excellent for him.
And what I think is fun about this fight is I'm excited to see him walk in the octagon because, let's remember, he was one of the linchpins to getting this whole event happen. And the crowd knows that, so it'll be fun to see this sort of homecoming fight for him. Yoel's going to be tough, though.
Yeah.
Really tough.
That's why I think, I mean, if Chris Weidman goes in, beats Yoel, we'll have to kind of see how the division plays out a little bit more, maybe.
Let's fast forward for a second because we've got a minute. Weidman wins this fight, gets against Bisping. What do you think happens in that fight?
Against Bisping?
Yes.
That could be a great fight. I think Weidman would take the belt back. I really do. I really do. But I think it'd be a great fight. I think it'd be a great setup, too. I almost don't want it too soon. But again, you can't wait too long on some of these.
Yeah, Bisping's not going to be here forever.
Right, exactly. But I think that would be a great fight. I think Chris Weidman gets a win. I think he's number. I mean, Luke's out. I get Luke's got the win over him, but if Luke's out and Luke hasn't fought in a while since December? Luke hasn't fought since. No, I'm sorry. And that's Weidman hasn't fought since December.
Right.
Luke obviously lost the title to Bisping.
To Bisping, and that was his last fight.
So I mean, at this point, we're going to be 6 or 7 months. If we're trying to postulate ahead, excuse me, my math, I'm just trying to add these months to how many it would take. I mean, I don't have any problem with Chris Weidman getting a title shot out of this fight because, like you said, Yoel Romero is no joke.
You think he gets by Yoel?
I think so. Okay. If he doesn't hear, and I don't want to write a guy off who loses against an amazing fighter like Yoel Romero, but I mean, if he doesn't get it here, where's he going to get it again? Where does he ever work himself back into the championship picture if he can't win essentially in New York? And I know we get a lot of pressure on those fighters sometimes, but luckily for him, I think it's good. In this regard, he doesn't have to worry about championship pressure. He doesn't have to carry this card as New York's champion. If Weidman, who at the time all of this was happening, had beat Silva twice, had shocked the world, had come out of nowhere, was, you know, this American hero, quote unquote. If Weidman had to walk into MSG with all of that, we've seen what happened.
Right,
we
right.
saw what happened in the heavyweight division. Miocic said he hated being in Cleveland defending his belt. It was just so much pressure on top of the fact of having to actually do it. So I don't think this is terrible for him. Again, you don't want to ever lose the belt, but you lost the belt. You still ended up on the card. You get to walk in under 3 championship fights. So there's not a ton of pressure there. People, of course, want to see you on the card. And, you know, you've got a top fighter, a contender across the cage that can put you back into that title shot. I think things have played out about as well as they could have for Chris Weidman if you would have started talking about this scenario the day after he lost to Luke Rockhold.
And so if Weidman wins, you put him above Jacare for the title shot?
Oh, man, I don't. At this point, I'm not mad about either of them. I think that'd be a really interesting fight to see Weidman and to see Bisping. And that's the other thing too that people kind of got mad about with Bisping, and a lot of us who've been following this fight game, is Jacare didn't do anything. He wants the title fight, but Bisping, deservedly so, doesn't need to take that fight that quickly,
right,
to be at 206, which is what everybody got mad about. Well, what happens? Well, who? What's the last fight? Jacare was good, yeah, but you see, Weidman won in New York, man. He's like number two again.
Yep,
he's like number two again. I want to see that fight. Champion's got that perch, and then everybody's just kind of fighting around underneath him. So then, does Jacare have to take another fight? Does Weidman have to fight Jacare to figure that out? No, because we need one of those dudes to probably fight Bisping,
right,
and figure out when Rockhold's coming back. So, you know, I mention this every time we do this show, every time we come out of a weekend event. Hell, we don't know, Eric, what's going to happen in a couple weeks where Tony Ferguson might be back in that shot, or he might fall in two or three steps without doing anything.
Right. Right.
Without doing anything, because we see a new guy, and this guy comes up, and this guy comes up, and now this guy's and it's all in the UFC dependent upon when they want to put the champion in the cage. For whatever reasons around it, the champion's fought recently, doesn't want to fight. If there's an injury, if there's a pay-per-view they're holding them for, that's where we end up working from, but we never know that. We never know where they're going to put that champion, and that is the biggest factor here. Weidman, Bisping, nobody's going to complain about it. Weidman, Jacare, nobody would complain about that one. Bisping, Jacare, nobody would complain about that one. So we've got a couple of avenues to work with here, even with Luke Rockhold out of the picture currently.
And in the welterweight division, remember, guys, it's going to be a bit of a long night. Starts at 10 o'clock, so you'll be done at 2, I'm guessing.
I think this is officially a 2 a.m. show.
Yeah.
They've started kind of doing that where they tell you that it's a four-hour block they've got.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, and that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, you've got three possible half-hour fights here with three championship
right.
fights.
So you got Kelvin Gastelum taking on Donald Cerrone in the welterweight division, another fun fight. And I keep saying this, in 2016, to say that Donald Cerrone is a thing, I think is remarkable, but he's certainly a thing. I like him in this fight. I think he's one of those guys that enjoys the fight game in a way that makes it hard to count him out no matter what. And he's been really successful at welterweight. Interesting to see if he can get past Gastelum, which I have him getting past Gastelum.
Yeah. Gastelum's been impressive, though, at points.
Certainly.
I mean, really impressive at some points. I mean, it's which Kelvin Gastelum,
yes,
are we getting?
My favorite game.
Yeah. Which Kelvin is here today? I don't know. We'll find out. Is it Johnny Hendricks Kelvin? Is it Neil Magny Kelvin?
Right. Is it Nate Marquardt? Is it Tyron Woodley?
Which exactly. Exactly. Well, Tyron Woodley. Okay. It's not that terrible to take that loss. Let's calm down a little bit. And then opening the card, we got a Miesha Tate fight, yep, who was main eventing 200.
Yep. Main events 200. Doesn't manage to keep her belt there. Raquel Pennington is who she'll be taking on at bantamweight. This will be an exciting way to kick this fight off because, again, I know, Ken, you love these revenge fights, and losing the belt is a pretty big motivator for a lot of these fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll see a pretty angry Miesha Tate want to get Raquel out of there as fast as possible.
Well, you've got an angry Miesha Tate that wants one of two things. She wants a fight against Ronda for the championship, or she wants a fight against Ronda. She
yes.
doesn't really care. She just wants to go back in there and prove that she should be in there. She says the Nunez fight is the worst fight she's ever fought in her life. So if that's true, I don't see any way Raquel Pennington wins this fight. I mean, Miesha Tate's just got the experience, the toughness, former champion. Again, if that's true. But again, you never know what the fighters are saying to get themselves motivated. But to open this card with that fight should be a lot of fun on Saturday night.
I think she wins that one quickly in the undercard.
Okay, wait. Let's do this real quick because I want to do this main event thing. And we'll get it on record.
Okay.
We'll vote.
Okay.
Because everybody's posting their pictures today.
Why not?
Put their little sticker on. Good for you. Your vote. Eddie Alvarez, Conor McGregor.
Conor.
I've got Conor. Tyron Woodley, Stephen Thompson.
Wonder Boy.
I've got Tyron Woodley. Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Carolina. Okay.
Jędrzejczyk.
I've got Joanna as well. Chris Weidman, Yoel Romero.
I'm going to take Weidman.
I will take Weidman as well. I thought you'd go the other way there.
I was thinking about it, but I think as much as Stipe hated Cleveland, I mm-hmm. think Chris will love New York.
Yeah, again, the pressure's not there with the championship,
yeah.
So a great situation. Kelvin Gastelum, Donald Cerrone.
Cerrone.
I'll take Kelvin there. And Miesha Tate, Raquel Pennington.
Tate.
Okay, I will take Tate as well. So we're not that far off.
So we're off two, so essentially
yeah.
one of us is going to end up 3-2 at some
yeah.
point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the Electoral College will then come into play.
Yes, they'll come in and tell you which one of us wins today.
Who actually won.
The lower card, so the prelim card on Fox Sports 1, Edgar and Stevens. Who you got there?
I will take Frankie Edgar just because I feel like it's stupid to ever count Frankie Edgar out.
Fair enough.
So I will take him until he just starts losing a lot. Otherwise, right. I'll throw my money at him. Like, go get him.
Nurmagomedov and Johnson.
I will take Nurmagomedov even after the layoff.
And Rashad Evans, Tim Kennedy. Rashad's first at 185.
I really like Tim Kennedy in this. I think I'm going to take Tim Kennedy.
All right. I will take Rashad in that. I will take Nurmagomedov. And I will also bet on Frankie because I think it's weird not to.
Yeah, you just do it.
The other bit of news we want to get to before we bounce is...
Oh, John Jones.
John Jones.
We haven't even gotten to it yet.
They went to arbitration. Turns out, fighters, if you're listening to this podcast, pro tip, arbitration is not your friend. Don't let it go to arbitration.
Yeah, they thought things went well.
Don't let it go to arbitration.
Okay.
Didn't go well.
I want to reset this, and I know we're not going to spend a ton of time on it because we're not going to see him for a year, and I made it very clear last week I didn't care until we actually see him set up for a fight.
This will be the last time we will say John Jones.
No, there'll be a couple more times because I do want to figure out things after Daniel Cormier because we're gonna be, here's the thing that I saw when I saw 1 year, we're going to be in that weird-ass gray area where Cormier's like not quite able to go that long without defending the title because he's fighting next month, but he really should fight John, and he's probably gonna want John first this time and try to do that. So it'll be interesting, but does he want to wait till July? So we've got 1 year retroactive to the date of the actual drug test, which, as we all know, was the week of the fight. So it's July. This is interesting, too, because the way this shook out, I saw you posted on our Facebook page. I'm like, 1 year? Is that a compromise? What's going on? I thought it was 2 years. Apparently, it's 1 year because it's not a direct anabolic steroid, and it could come from other sources, correct?
Yes.
So the max, he got the max for what that test was, which you and I at least, didn't realize until actually
this
kind of played through the system.
Until I read
and we're not the only ones, by the way. Yeah. Everybody kept saying 2 years possible. We'll see. He's thinking he's going to get 6 months. He got the max allowed by the drug he tested for in that hearing with the USADA.
Yeah, so they dropped the hammer on him, gave him a year, puts him in summer of 2017.
Lost $9 million to take a boner pill.
Yes.
Can we say boner pill?
Yep.
Because I was going to say dick pill, but I wasn't sure.
I probably shouldn't say that one. But yeah, so $9 million.
Who does that? Look, you're a great friend, Eric. You're a great friend, Eric. I've known you, what, 20 years now, right?
Yep, at least.
Okay. I don't know if you just handed me a random pill if I wouldn't ask you a couple more questions about it.
Yeah,
hey, man, take this.
Yeah, I think, like, I mean...
Sweet!
I even think, like, let's take that one step further to something that's a little bit more socially acceptable. I think if you had handed me a mason jar full of clear liquid, I'd probably ask a couple more questions. I wouldn't just drink whatever this is.
Yeah, this looks like a great idea. I mean, I trust you a lot. I just would ask some questions.
Yeah. It's not like I wouldn't still enjoy the moonshine. I just asked how you made it. And
so, yeah, he was hit with the full sanction at this point. The interesting thing is because this isn't an NSAC hearing. This was a USADA hearing. Most people expect the USADA decision to be mirrored by Nevada, which is basically we're going to recognize
that this is the ruling,
which is weird because they still get to have their own hearing because it was in Vegas.
Yep.
But every other state, this is already the ruling, which is kind of fun. And I don't know. Until this is done, you just never know. Because each step of this process, I'm learning something new. Clearly, the fighters and their teams are learning new things because they thought it went well. And
so is
he got knocked with the max.
Learning because we're all like 2 years. Sorry, we're wrong. It's 1 year. It's totally 1 year.
Yeah. So apparently, his degree of fault verged on reckless, according to the ruling.
Well, and they've been very clear in this, and this sends a message that if you're not like, let's talk about last weekend. If you're Tony Ferguson, who is in the upper echelon of that division but isn't making Conor McGregor money,
mm-hmm.
being out for a year would be catastrophic.
Yes.
Right? For his fighting career. He's got other irons in the fire. Like, he and his wife would be fine financially. But if this was the only thing he was doing, it would be catastrophic. So they are sending a message to say what we said last week, which was, guys, try chicken.
Right.
Try eggs. Mm-hmm. Try spinach. Try kale. You want to go to GNC and take something off the shelf? You are playing career roulette.
Well, we had heard rumors, and I know you didn't want to report about the dick pill until we heard more, but
right.
This wasn't even that.
Right.
This wasn't even that. Like, dude, chill on the coke if you're having problems with the junk.
Uh-huh.
Don't start taking pills. I get it. It's catastrophic for a fighter not fighting at this scale. I would still say it's catastrophic if I lost $10 million, Eric. I don't know how much money I would have to have in my life to not consider that a catastrophic loss. It's $10 million before you had to pay the lawyers and figure everything out and lose out on a year of sponsorships and fights.
And let's, just for a second, guys, let's frame this for a second, that a 29-year-old professional athlete is having problems with his junk.
Chill on the coke, bro!
So he needs boner pills.
Okay, all right.
29 years old.
I don't know what to say
not
about that.
49 years old, 29 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Henderson's like, dude, my stuff works fine.
Right.
What's your problem?
Right. You know what they gave me in Japan, and I'm still able.
I'm totally fine
to do that. Jesus. That was probably the most interesting thing is like just to hear it all out in the open now. It's like, oh man, you did do that. You idiot.
A total idiot.
Didn't you see what happened to Lamar Odom? For Christ's sake.
It's incredible. Incredible to watch somebody get in their own way. And I saw somebody on Twitter say this, which I thought was remarkable, is that the crazier part of the story is when he comes back in July, he still might be leagues ahead of the division in his skill set.
Might be, but I'm still, and we'll, this these will be the opportunities we have to discuss John Jones on the show before he comes back, which will be the fact that I think Daniel Cormier is going to be chomping at the bit if he's still the champion at that point to take, he's going to do whatever he has to be John's first fight. Back in the cage because he was damn near crying when he saw that terrible performance
sure.
against OSP. And it wasn't out of sadness. It was just out of lost opportunity to just go in there against John Jones. And this division could be totally different. I mean, we don't know even what's going to happen in the Cormier fight. You don't know if Rumble's just really got it going now and who's going to be there and what's going to be happening. So,
and as a fan of this division, though, you want to figure out what's happening with John Jones and get him back as soon as possible because what I don't want to see is another 8 months of Gustafson, Cormier, and Rumble. Gustafson, Cormier, and Rumble. Gustafson, Cormier, and Rumble until Jones comes back.
That might be. We're not going to see that many. We got two title fights essentially before John comes
back.
Could
be eight. As many as
could be eight. I'm sorry. You're right. Until he's scheduled to come back. Because again, does he get out of his way before that?
Right.
I don't know.
Let's remember the other thing that isn't John Jones' friend besides Cialis is free time.
It's free time.
And so John Jones with a lot of free time is a bad, bad, bad thing.
Yeah. I don't know if hobbies would be
yes
the key to this.
Hopefully he gets a subscription to Audible and can just listen to audiobooks and just keep a low profile.
Yeah, so what do we got in this division right now? See, this is the problem. We start talking about John. We start talking about, like, oh, is Bader going to make another comeback? Who's? See, here's the weird thing about this list is almost everybody, until you get down to Krylov, who's number 10, we've already seen all these guys kind of shake their way through it. Like, is Jim Manoa going to come out of nowhere and beat John Jones at some point? I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but it's unlikely. So it's very interesting in that light heavyweight division how much we've really run through it. Yet, we're not sure if Daniel Cormier can necessarily beat everybody else all the time. You still have to give Rumble a chance. You never know if Gus has a chance. Glover Teixeira could come out of nowhere. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see that. We know John is out at least a year. He'll be back in July. That means he can be booked for the July card probably at some point. I doubt they've laid their dates out yet.
Can he, remind me on this before we go, can he get a license while he's still suspended for a card in July?
They just have to work out the timing so he can be licensed in time. They've done that before where guys come off suspension. I'd have to dig it up, or maybe somebody can send it to us at Wow Show on Twitter, or you can tweet me, the Ken Evans. Let me know. I feel like he can do everything he needs to. All he has to do is get that license before he gets in the cage.
Gotcha.
Is my understanding. Now, there might be some more interesting things because of what happened with Brock and whether or not they want to do a license where you have to be licensed the entire time you're training so we can do the drug testing. Obviously, if that's the case, we're going to have to see, even if Daniel Cormier wins, there's going to be another title defense in there before we get to John. And he may not even want to do that. He says he's taking John out of his life, and he may mean it. He may beat Rumble the next time, look at the division you just laid out and goes, well, guys, I've essentially beat all those dudes or gained nothing from beating anybody else. Hey, peace out. I'm going to go back in the Fox booth.
Or he could, I mean, if he wants to take one more fight, he could go up to heavyweight and fight Stipe.
And maybe do something like that. I mean, because, I mean, I don't know if I necessarily discount Daniel Cormier at heavyweight against that division at this point. And it's not because I'm not impressed by the heavyweights. It's simply because I'm very impressed by Daniel Cormier. And I do think that Daniel Cormier without a cut can be a very formidable fighter, obviously. Well, we saw him win the Grand Prix.
Right, he won the Grand Prix as an alternate. So,
At heavyweight. So there you go.
All right. Well, guys, we will cover all the action this weekend on Twitter and Facebook by searching WOW Show. Have a wonderful weekend. And if you enjoy the podcast, make sure you review it on iTunes or Google Play.
Just give us five. It doesn't hurt you to give us five. It's not like your vote today. Like, this really doesn't matter. Like, you rating us five, even if you hate us, doesn't hurt you.
Right.
So just do it.
Yes.
Just do it. Show the man how you feel. Is that it?
Yes.
Let's wrap this.
See you next week.